You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
In the Octagon, out in San Francisco, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
Do you like not care about your hygiene? Is that what we're hearing here?
I'm actually an obsessive hand washer.
They're maybe the best team in the MLS.
Wait a minute. No, Cashman, that's wrong.
Why?
Because, no, that's absolutely wrong.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM FC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, Dave Goss, fan of the World Series losing New York Mets, and Matt the Armchair Analyst from the Octagon. I am currently rocking the Royals hat backwards.
Oh, my God.
What do I look like?
You look like such a pile. You look like a pile of sea. You look like such a miserable person right now.
I don't feel miserable. That's a strange. It's not matching up there.
Doyle, earlier today when Wiebe was talking to someone with his backwards hat and his hoodie on, I like had like a moment where I forgot who he was, and I was like, I'll punch this guy in the face right now. Just hit him on the side of the neck.
Oh, on the neck. Good Lord. That is so vicious. I hope you're working on your musical skills here.
I am working on
getting the lyrics together.
I'm going on a hiatus. I'm hiding myself away over the next week and a half so I can just build this song.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable, actually. Very, very reasonable. Look, Major League Baseball, their playoffs are over, but Major League Soccer's playoffs are rolling along.
And that's what you call a transition.
That is what I'm calling a transition here. Sunday was a big day. Four huge games, the first legs of the conference semifinals, kind of setting the tone for what will be the deciding leg next Sunday. We will run through all the results, all the games. We'll go over everything. We're also going to check in each market with a reporter from each of the home teams. That means out in Seattle, Matt Pence of the Seattle Times. In Portland, Jamie Goldberg, who does a great job on the Timbers and the Thorns. And then we'll check in with a couple of MLSsoccer.com regulars out in the Eastern Conference, I believe. Let's see. Pablo Maurer.
Montreal and D.C. are both in the Eastern Conference.
Olivier Tremblay. Look, I had a late night last night. I'm just pushing along. I'm pushing along here. But let's start with what I think was the most exciting match of the night, and that would be the nightcap. Seattle Dallas, a 2-1 win for the Sounders, an incredible moment for Clint Dempsey at the end of this game, a free kick, a curling free kick that beat Jesse Gonzalez, who has been one of the best goalkeepers in MLS. Fabian Castillo with an early goal in this one. Andres Ivanschitz got the equalizer. He got on the board. We've been waiting for a big impact from him. But now Seattle have the quote-unquote advantage. They do have the aggregate lead, but Dallas have an away goal. Matt, Dallas has got to be pretty frustrated. They weren't happy about the foul call on the play that led to Dempsey's free kick. I think it was a foul. Mm-hmm. Did they do enough in this leg one?
Yeah, I mean, look, a 2-1 loss isn't terrible as long as you get an away goal to bring back home to you. And we know Dallas are always really, really good at home, but the thing is, I think Seattle hit upon something this week by moving Dempsey back to left midfield, which he used to play for the U.S. national team back in the Bob Bradley days. It gave them a little bit more of an ability to hold the ball and sort of initiate plays from different parts on the field. It does move one of your best finishers further from goal, but if I'm Ziggy Schmidt right now, I don't care. I need to have Dempsey in that midfield to open things up and to sort of shuttle the ball from back to front. And suddenly they're a lot harder to scout than they were 4 or 5 days ago.
Now, there's some injury issues for the Sounders. No Ozzie Alonso in this one. No Brad Evans. No Leo Gonzalez. A lot of young cats coming into the lineup, Dave. And Dallas initially looked like they might run away with this game. Yeah. Fabian Castillo and Mauro Diaz doing what they do best, getting out on the break. A beautiful goal. But it just, over the course of the game, Seattle got a foothold. But Dallas has to be encouraged at the very least that, hey, there's some backups that are going to be in there, and this team, they're not necessarily a speedy team, especially centrally.
No, and when they got out in transition and they were able to take guys one-on-one, I mean, Barrios running by Andy Rose in transition, that's something that Ziggy Schmidt probably threw up while watching on the sideline, just that it even happened. There were opportunities there. The goal from FC Dallas, the outside of the football from Mario Diaz, he controlled the game in the beginning because there's no Ozzie Alonso, there's no Gonzalo Pineda. I mean, that's his territory. You take away two starters from that area. Seattle figured it out over a little bit of time. They were able to at least keep it on top of the box and not get caught behind them. They really didn't get stuck. Tyrone Mears was much more defensive than we've seen him in past games, sitting back trying to cover a little bit. And Zach Scott did just enough to keep them in this game. Chad Marshall, I thought that was smart to move him to left center back to give O'Neill Fisher a little bit of cover, and I actually like Fisher's speed helping you out. So if they could get Brad Evans back and put him at center back, I think they'd feel a lot more comfortable. But, I mean, it's 2-1, right? An away goal, 2-1 lead, both teams, I think, coming out of this one feeling like if they can do their jobs that they can go through.
Home teams 2-1-1 on Sunday. Seattle, one of the two that got victories at home. Let's go to Matt Pence out in Seattle. Matt, what's up, man?
Not too much. How you guys doing?
We're doing good. We're doing good. A wild scene last night in Seattle. A good way to end the first night of the MLS Conference semifinals. And the way it ended, I think, is the way at least the networks would like, right? Clint Dempsey with a massive goal. If I remember correctly, I read a very interesting piece from you later this year about the pressure on Dempsey and questions that the fans had about, well, whether he's being paid too much. Is he worth it? He answered some of that. What was the vibe like? What did he have to say afterwards?
Yeah, I think he's definitely answered that over this last week, just the way that he's played, both against Salt Lake, then against L.A., and then last night. Sort of this whole team has said from the beginning of the year that the playoffs are where they're going to be judged. And yeah, the regular season might not have been great from Dempsey or a lot of other people, but they had said that they have the pieces and they have the big names that are going to step up when they matter. And I think that Dempsey answered that last night, and really the whole team did as well.
You know, one of the big question marks around this team is injuries and depth, and a few different starting lineups move O'Neill Fisher, Zach Scott, Marco Papa in the starting lineup. That center midfield, Ozzie Alonso and Gonzalo Pineda, both still out hurt. Brad Evans, who was captain, not there. Zach Scott, where's the armband? What's the status of some of these guys? Is there anyone that looks like they're going to be ready for the second leg?
I think the biggest question mark out of that group is Evans, whether he can come back or not. It was a hamstring thing, another week to recover. I think there's a decent shot that we could see Evans, at least in some capacity, in Frisco next weekend. I do think that Alonzo's injury is a little bit more serious than that. A groin thing, those are hard to rush back from. He's dealt with that before. And you could definitely feel his absence last night. I think that Mauro Diaz did a lot of good work in areas that Alonzo normally kind of patrols and controls in games. So I think that he was missed, and I think that that's a pretty significant long-term concern for Seattle if they expect to make a deep push here, because he's so important for what they do. But I think that he's probably at least another week away, but Evans could return in time for next week's game.
How concerned should Sounders fans be about that first half and the way that Dallas's speed seemed to trouble Seattle? Like, I know it's not groundbreaking analysis to say that it's hard to keep up with Fabian Castillo, but when Mauro Diaz is on like this, he's liable to be released at any time, and that seemed to cause problems.
Oh, it definitely caused problems. I think that that was a pretty significant concern going in. I mean, if Dallas would have scripted a perfect first half from their perspective, they couldn't have really had any better. Castillo hits them on the break. They can sit back and absorb pressure and just sort of let their wingers run. And they had some chances to sort of put the game away, and they go up 2-0, and Seattle's in deep trouble no matter how the rest of the game goes. So I think that it's definitely a concern, especially looking ahead to a potential Western Conference final against either Vancouver, who likes to play that way too, or Portland with Nagby sort of doing what he's doing right now. So I think that, yeah, that's still a concern and will be. And as much as 2-1 might seem comfortable going away from home, I don't know that Seattle's back line is going to keep it at zeros.
You mentioned that 2-0 that Dallas might have had via chances. Well, they might have had it via the spot as well, right? I mean, Tyrone Mears, there were people saying he got away with one on this handball. That seemed to me to be the turning point of the game. What did you see?
For sure, because that was at the point where at 1-0, it just felt like one way or the other, this game wasn't going to end 1-0 to Dallas. And Dallas is pushing, they're hitting on the break. And yeah, I mean, Kevin Stott said it was ball to hand, wasn't a deliberate action, which is fair, but you see those given all the time. I mean, the ball very clearly strikes into Mears' arms. He's sort of trying to get away from it, but it's hard to tell. And yeah, you've definitely seen those given. And if Dallas does convert that and go up 2-0, like I said, even if Seattle scores 3 the rest of the way, it's a little bit different going down to Dallas than a 2-1.
Well, it is 2-1, an away goal for FC Dallas. Seattle Sounders with the aggregate lead. Matt Pence, you can follow him on Twitter, @MattPence. Matt, thank you so much for joining us, man. Follow his coverage out there, folks.
Anytime, guys. Thanks.
Big thanks to Matt Pence for joining us here on this Monday. Next Sunday, the second leg, this one in Dallas, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, FS1 and Fox Deportes in the U.S. if you want to watch that one. I mean, I would highly recommend it. Another big second leg coming up after that in the Western Conference next Sunday. That would be Vancouver against Portland. Vancouver will host at 10 p.m. Eastern. Also, FS1, Fox Deportes, TSN, and RDS in Canada. They'll go up to British Columbia with a 0-0 scoreline. Nothing doing in this one as far as attack goes. Doyle, but some interesting things on the injury front. No Adam Quarse. No Diego Chara in this match. How much did that affect Portland? We kind of gotten used to them scoring goals here.
Yeah, we have, and Chara is so clean with his passing that he just makes it easier for Valeri and Nagbe to get the ball a little higher up the field, and I think we saw a pretty good adjustment from Caleb Porter to drop Nagbe a little deeper and help out Jack Jewsbury in this one. We saw him picking up the ball, I mean, basically right off the back line, so it had an effect, but even so, a scoreless draw is actually pretty great for Portland, because any tie now is a good enough result for them. I mean, even a scoreless tie next week sends it into extra time, and they are probably pretty confident after this week that they know they can get the job done in extra time and in PKs. So this actually kind of weirdly helped the lower-seeded team out.
Yeah, ultimately, Vancouver, the best away team in MLS, their home record...
It's worst of all the playoff teams.
Yeah, it's not particularly good. So I think if you're Portland, you have to feel good about this. An interesting note from this one, Adam Quarse, who was kind of the hero for them against Sporting Kansas City. Well, I don't know if this was in the works for a while or if the Timbers Army did a bang-up job on getting this TIFO out early. They had a Quarse TIFO ready to go. They put it up. No Quarse. He had the flu. So they had a little bit of a sign next to it that said, hey, next week you'll be our hero. Next week. You can check that out at MLSsoccer.com. Dave, Adi versus Waston was the heavyweight fight in this one. They might have looked better with Aruti on the field without Adi in there. What did you take away from this match overall?
I think that they look better with Aruti because it's a late game sub when they're starting to stretch the game and what he brings. I don't think he's a guy you start. I don't think you look at it and say, we need this for 90 minutes. I think you look at it and say, we have a great impact sub that we can bring off the
Diego
bench.
Diego Valeri has
twice
now. Some points to make with him, let's say, during this match about where he should be on the field and how he was playing. So there it wasn't all harmony with him.
And I will say, and we discussed this a little bit last game, and we might talk to Jamie about it, but Milano was better in this game than he was versus KC, and I still think when Esprit is in there, they look more dangerous, and I would be interested. I understand he's your DP, but if a guy's not performing, there's no point going down with the ship. If you have a guy in Esprit who's giving you strong minutes, who's better in transition, maybe giving you a different element, although he plays similar to Wallace, so maybe it's not a different element, I would be interested in making that move.
Hey, Doyle, what's it look like in this next leg? How's the tactical approach going to go?
I think Portland's going to keep doing what they're doing, and I don't think that you can bring Milano off, because even though he's not producing goals and assists, he's producing danger, and he's producing space on the field for the guys around him. He might be one of those guys who just does not believe he's in a slump. You watch how he plays, and every time there's a chance to make a run, every time there's a chance to take space, he does that, and he constantly puts the pressure on, and it really does open up the field for everybody else. I don't see that from Asprilla. I think Asprilla comes to the ball too much and ends up making the field a little bit tighter. So I think it's actually kind of an Aruti Adi situation where you say, all right, this guy's been able to be an impact sub. We're going to keep him in that role and keep the faith with Milano.
We don't know how much impact Pedro Morales is going to have on this series, Dave. I
on
don't know if
series,
it's any.
In the playoffs. He hasn't played in a while. It doesn't look like he's getting any closer. And what Doyle just said about Milano.
Hasn't started. He got a couple of minutes at the end there.
And what he said about Milano and attracting guys and allowing other people to play. There isn't really anyone for Vancouver that can attract defensive attention and allow Mane opportunities one-on-one, to Chara opportunities one-on-one. You see Rivero floating wide to try and pick up the ball and set up his teammates, but talk about confidence or slump. Whatever it is he's in is almost historic at this point.
Yeah.
And you know he's going to pop up and score a goal, which would credit. I can't imagine a striker having less confidence.
This is actually what he did if you go back and look at the stats in Uruguay and Chile. Octavio Rivero. He started hot most seasons, and then he fell off. And if the Vancouver Whitecaps go out after the semifinal round once again, I think you'll see a lot of people pointing at goal scoring and saying,
yeah,
that's the problem. We don't have a consistent presence up there. Adi has been that presence for the Timbers. A lot of questions with them ahead of Sunday. Let's go to Jamie Goldberg out in Portland.
Doing well.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us here. No hangover for the Timbers, though. I think I was a little bit surprised by that. I thought that might be like emotionally after that shootout, certainly physically, 120 minutes. But we didn't see that on Sunday. Were you surprised?
Yeah, I think we were all a little bit surprised by that. Caleb Porter told the media over and over again he didn't think fatigue would be a factor. And it was kind of hard to believe given the emotional strain and physical strain on the bodies playing 120 minutes Thursday night, but the Timbers were able to recover. And I think that's just because this team is in a rhythm right now. They're playing their best soccer and they're excited to be in playoffs, and they've been playing in pressure situations since the very end of the regular season. The final three games, they were really just playing to make sure they'd be in the playoffs. So I think they've really come together and are doing well when they need to get results. And somehow they managed to come together and not let fatigue be too much of a factor on Sunday.
Now they're in a good position. They go to Vancouver. A draw will get them through because of away goals. There were some absences in this game for the Timbers. Diego Chará, we've talked about here. Adam Quarise also out. Kind of an interesting note that we mentioned the TIFO for Quarise up, and then he has the next week there. What's the status on these two guys? Is there a good chance we'll see them? I think Quarise is the flu, correct? So you'd figure they get some fluids in him and he'll be back for next Sunday.
Yeah, it sounds like Caleb said that he just was sick the night before the game, so that was kind of a surprise. Jake Gleason didn't even know he'd be starting until he was on the way to the stadium on the day of the game. But it sounds like flu is something that he should be able to get over within a week, so I would expect to see Quarise back in there. Chará also seems likely to be back in there. Caleb Porter said that he would be surprised if he wasn't in there. Chará's dealing with a foot sprain, and it sounds like he was, up until game day, was a game-time decision. He was very close, and the Timbers ultimately decided that he wasn't ready to go. But now with a full another week, it sounds like he should be ready and able to play.
And a guy who's seemed to have found his feet really down this run is Darlington Nagbe, moving in that center midfield role. What have you seen from him? And maybe has his tone changed a little bit? Does he sound confident? Does he sound like he's fitting in maybe a little bit more?
Yeah, when he speaks to us, he always sounds like the same guy, but he's definitely looking more confident on the field. I believe he led the team in passing percentage, touches by far Sunday, and it was really important to the Timbers to maintain the possession, given that fatigue was potentially going to be part of a factor on Sunday, and Darling Sang was a huge part in helping the team maintain that possession. And I think he's been playing with a lot more confidence. You just see the types of shots he's trying to take. If he has an opening, he's shooting the ball a little bit more. And that's something I think the media, I think fans have wanted to see from Nagbe, because he has always been good for the Timbers in the offense, but we want to see that final third production, which he had in 2013 and before. And he seems to be getting that back a little bit more. So he's been a huge part of the attack, and I think the Timbers will look to him again in Vancouver.
Such a dynamic player, saving his best for the part of the season that matters most. You mentioned they head to Vancouver for that second leg on Sunday. It's kind of gone under the radar somehow, some way, but this is a Cascadia Cup matchup. Take us into Providence Park on Sunday. Could you feel it? Can you feel it with this team? Or is there a little bit of kind of caginess because of the stakes?
I think that it's, you know, pretty exciting for them to be playing Vancouver and having the Cascadia Cup matchup, of course. I think they are very excited, but they're trying to keep, you know, focused on the next result and not trying to get too emotional about it. Caleb Porter obviously always talks about keeping the highs low and the lows high, and there wasn't too much emotion inside the locker room on Sunday. I expect there'll be a little bit more emotion, of course, with this being a elimination game going into Vancouver, but I'm expecting a ton of Timbers fans to go up there. There was a lot of fans from Vancouver that came down, and it is a huge Cascadia Cup rivalry, and both teams want to prove that they are the better team in Cascadia.
Now, Caleb Porter has kind of gone back and forth on tactics. We talked to him recently, and it was very interesting to get his insight on kind of pragmatism and how you set teams up to play. Porter Ball was the big buzzword there for a while. Then he was very, very pragmatic, was dropping Jose Mourinho references. And now it seems like he's back to more of an attacking bent with his formation, especially with Chara in there. How do you expect the Timbers to play in Vancouver? Do you think they'll be cautious? Or do you think they'll go out there and try to grab an away goal as fast as they can?
I think they're going to go with a similar formation that they've been going with, most likely with Chara back in there. Assuming he is back in there, it's going to be kind of that single pivot with just one defensive midfielder. More of, like you said, the attack-minded approach that Caleb Porter came into the league with. I think they're going to be pretty aggressive in Vancouver. They're not going to want to just sit back because a scoreless draw would take them to extra time. And so they need that goal to ensure that they're going to be able to move on. So I think they'll look for that goal. I think after they get it, knowing that Vancouver has to score two goals, if they were to get an early goal, have to score two goals to be able to advance, they might sit back a little bit more. We've seen Caleb Porter make a defensive sub early in the second half sometimes, depending on the scoreline. So I think that's where you might see some changes, but I expect them to come out pretty aggressive.
Certainly could put the pressure on the Whitecaps if they do get that early goal. You can follow all of Jamie's coverage at the Argonian, at Jamie B. Goldberg on Twitter. Thank you so much, Jamie, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Big thanks to Matt Pence and Jamie Goldberg for joining us here in this segment. We are going to switch over to the Eastern Conference. When we come back, we'll talk to Pablo Maurer as well as Olivier Tremblay, some refereeing decisions that have people up in arms in the East.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Yo simplemente vivo.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys. David Goss, Matt Doyle.
You don't want to just let that ride a little?
I do.
A little Mark Anthony.
Yeah, it's some good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah. Right from here in New York.
Straight from New York?
Yeah, Puerto Rico.
Okay. Matt the Armchair and his Doyle as well. We're into the Eastern Conference. Some good games out there on Sunday. First legs of the conference semifinals if you need a little bit of a refresher course.
That was a long day.
It was. It really was a long day. And it was one. You have to have some lasting power. I feel like you got to get up, you got to stretch a little bit, maybe get the foam roller out, get your legs from locking up. No?
I didn't do any foam rolling, but there was definitely like a reset period probably right before the Seattle game that was necessary.
How do you do this, though? Because obviously, I'm assuming most of the people that listen to us read your after-game columns. I mean, you got to be on, dude.
You know I'm a big proponent of the foam roller. Halftime is stretch it out, halftime is yoga, halftime is foam roller. And then by about 30 minutes left in the third game, that's when you order the pepperoni pizza and you crack open a nice bottle of California Red.
That sounds like a recipe for success right there.
And guys, I'm a pro. I've been doing
that's
this
part of
for
this
years.
Journalism game. It's part mind, part body.
Yeah, well, like, you got to refuel
it's
the
like
beast.
90-40, right? I mean, that's the percentages there.
You know, yeah. I had friends yesterday posting pictures of themselves running the New York Marathon, and that took them like 4 hours. My day was about 10 and a half hours in that chair. It's no joke.
Yeah, the exertion is
real. I know a guy who every year on Facebook puts up, thanks to all who supported me, like, I'm so glad I was able to finish the marathon, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Has never run it. Does it every single year.
Oh,
and every
man.
Time you see him, like, a month or two later, you're like, hey, did you run the marathon? And he's like, got you.
Oh, God. Well, yeah. Hey, hit us up with your how did you survive this weekend? How are you going to do next week? And what's the plan? What's the setup? At Extra Time Radio, extratime at MLSsoccer.com. We got some swag. We got some DOS Reboot books to give away. By the way, we interviewed Raphael Hogenstein today. Good stuff.
Or Honigstein.
Honigstein. Yeah, look. He's
phenomenal interview.
He said, look, in England they call it one thing, in Germany another. But look around for that one. Let's get to the East, though. Montreal 2-1 winners against the Columbus Crew. I hate to say it about the Crew at this point, but look, they're so talented. They're so dynamic in the attack. But over and over and over, it comes down to mistakes. That's the difference on the defensive side of the ball. That's the difference between this team being an elite team, I think, and a team that has some question marks. Dave, once again, Patrice Bernier, an open header, zonal marking didn't work for them. Kai Kamara misses out on him. And then Michael Parkhurst goes down in a heap under really no contact, and Johan Venegas scores the winner.
Which is the most frustrating part is the one guy I think they can rely on is Parkhurst. The question marks are all around him, and he just collapses with the ball and gives it up in what is just a terrible moment.
To be fair, though, earlier in the game, with a moment of Didier Drogba, he did get a call kind of similar in which it was very, very slight contact, and they got the whistle. Drogba
this one's clearly not a foul.
Yeah, nothing.
And Venegas takes care of business. I'm not writing Columbus off yet. They're an explosive team. We actually talked about how we want to see them be pragmatic and be smart, and they scored first, so you'd like to see them be able to hold on a little bit better, but 2-1, you get the away goal. I think this is a team coming off of that they have question marks, mainly being Kenethan Finley and Kai Kamara find an opening because they were both smothered defensively in this game, but they have the opportunity to go out there and win this series.
It wasn't all Drogba. This was not a game in which you said, hey, he dragged them to victory. He actually had the, what's the right word for it, the perfect drop-down header to Pipa Higuain for the goal. Although he was just on the wrong team. But he had some tough moments in this one. He had the Drogba leg lock. If you haven't seen that one, go to MLSsoccer.com. A really bizarre play where he comes into Steve Clark and then grabs his leg and basically tackles him. I mean, it was like a WWF move. It's turned into a meme online now. I'll grab anything out there. It's weird. It's just weird. You have to watch it. But Kai Kamara and Ethan Finley, like you said, smothered. Kai Kamara, Doyle, he hasn't scored since September, has he? I mean, am I wrong there?
No, it's been since September 26th, and he's kind of fallen off the face of the earth, not just in terms of scoring, but in terms of hold-up play. And that's what the Crew needed from him yesterday. They needed him to put his back into Cabrera or Simon and hold the ball up and bring the rest of the guys into the play. If Finlay's not getting space, if Miram's not getting space, it's because Kamara isn't doing the work to change the rhythm and change the angles of the game. They need the old Kai Kamara back next week if they're going to have a chance. And to be fair, he's been around. He's had some success in the playoffs. I think they will see him again. But Montreal have to be very happy with what they did over the final hour of this one.
Let's talk to a guy who was at Stade Saputo on Sunday. That's Ollie Tremblay of MLSsoccer.com. Ollie, what's up, man?
I'm doing very well, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no doubt. I have to imagine that you were pretty pumped up there at Stade Saputo after that Drogba leg lock. A big wrestling fan, correct? Correct me if I'm wrong here. That was good technique.
It was very good technique. You know what? Japanese wrestling fans are big on those leg locks and submission skills, and I think Drogba would be massively over in Japan and New Japan Pro Wrestling, for example, with skills like that. Because I mean, he had Steve Clark locked up pretty good.
He did. He did. Did you get a chance to speak to Didi after this one? Did anybody talk about that? I mean, is there any worry that perhaps there might be a disco decision? I know Twitter was talking about that. I personally don't think that it'll happen, but curious what the reaction was from the Impact locker room.
Well, for one thing, Didi Drogba didn't feel like speaking after that game, probably because he didn't feel like he'd put together a performance worthy of his previous ones from Montreal, because now he's only a mere 11 goals in 12 games, so that's not quite the numbers that he was putting in before that game. But yeah, I mean, that, in terms of disco, I don't think Montreal right now are too worried about this. It wasn't that big of a talking point, to be honest with you. Montreal had a lot more gripes with the general refereeing performance rather than fears that maybe the disco are going to get involved, to be honest.
What's the buzz like, Ollie, in Montreal right now? Because it seems like once Drogba landed in Quebec there, it's been like a snowball effect, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and you knock off Toronto FC, you had the great TV ratings up there in Canada, now you get the first leg win against the Crew, and we're looking at maybe a conference final, maybe an MLS Cup. What's it feel like to be a soccer fan in the city right now?
Right now, it feels absolutely great to be a soccer fan in this city because Montreal Impact have been getting the kind of attention that I think you go back to Joey Saputo's kind of crying out for a return of the buzz. at the very beginning of the season. This is pretty much what he was looking for, and it's funny what a winning team will do to that effect. You see Montreal making headlines, being on first page in the sports section of the newspapers, even though, you know, the Habs are still very much a big thing. One prominent commentator who was actually much more of a baseball guy even ventured this morning into saying that maybe 10 years from now the Impact would rival the Canadiens in terms of coverage and importance. I don't know about that personally. I don't think I think the Canadiens are pretty much untouchable. But yeah, just a general real good feeling, and you can see in the crowd, even against Columbus, even though one of the supporters group had their privileges revoked for using flares in the previous game against Toronto, all three major supporter groups or sections really in perfect communion with their players, celebrating as one. You feel that something very special is going on at Saputo Stadium right now.
One of the good feelings you have to think around this team, around this city, is the resurgence of Patrice Bernier, Montreal native, played with them in the A-League, coming through, didn't play a lot early in the season. Maybe a lot of people, I would put myself on that list, thought he was closing in on retirement more than being
his
a
wife
star.
Was not one of them, though. Not one of them.
What can you say about what he's done? What's the mood like around him right now and around the fans? Happy maybe to see what he's been doing.
Patrice Bernier's season has been nothing short of amazing for so many reasons, not in terms of pure numbers and his contribution on the field, although the playoffs have actually been pretty good for him. But you look back just a couple of months ago when his wife took to Facebook to say that if he was not starting the following game, that it would be an insult to him, and that it would be a terrible decision by his coach, who was then Frank Lopez, who was perceived by most Montreal fans as having maybe a negative bias towards Patrice Bernier. But then Patrice Bernier takes a break following that Facebook post to reflect on his future, and then he comes back to the team. He never publicly complained, to his credit. He always kept on being a leader. He leads by example. He's not the most vocal guy, even on the Montreal Impact video productions that they put together every time that they win a game a couple of days after. You don't see Patrice Bernier, you know, standing up in front of everybody and putting out a big rallying cry. It's more Nigel Leo-Coker's or Didier Drogba's job. But big leader by example is Patrice Bernier, and now he's been given a chance by Mauro Gallo to show exactly what the Impact had been missing on since pretty much the time that Frank Lopez took over. Patrice Bernier didn't have a lot of minutes from that point on, but then just such big performances. He was the man of the match, I thought, against Toronto when he scored that big opening goal and then scoring from a header. I mean, he's, what, 5'9", and he slips in between Sorrow and Kamara. Pretty big performance, if you ask me.
A big week for Patrice Bernier. A big couple weeks for him. Congrats to him for getting back in the team and doing something very, very special for the Impact. Thank you so much, Ollie, for joining us. You can follow him at Ollie Tremblay. Good luck, man. Have fun on Sunday.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
Big thanks for Ollie for joining us out there from Quebec. Drogba and some loan rumors this morning. The Daily Mail, though, so take that for what it is. Italy, perhaps, something to watch as the postseason goes on here. On the other side of the bracket there in the East, it's the Atlantic Cup, DC United and New York Red Bulls. They were at RFK Stadium on Sunday. The Red Bulls showed up. DC showed up, just the attacking side did not. Saborio starting up top for them. Chris Rolfe moving out wide. No Chris Pontius in this game. Of course, no Bobby Boswell in this game. He was suspended for that knee to Juan Agudelo that we discussed last week, a one-game suspension for Boswell. So he'll be back for the return leg at Red Bull Arena. Doyle, this was ugly. This was very ugly. This was historically ugly from DC yep. United, in fact. No shots on goal. That's the first time ever in the playoffs a home team has managed that. Their possession, I think the worst percentage, no, passing percentage, I think, was the worst percentage this year. What happened here?
It was it was the worst this year. It was the worst ever, well, not ever, but the worst measured since 2010 in the playoff game, which is all the data that we have since signing on with Opta. It is the third worst in any game that Opta has measured over the last, you know, 5-6 seasons. So it was bad. They completely conceded central midfield. They dropped their lines incredibly deep. And they said, all right, Fabian Szabo, you're going to go 2-on-5 and you're going to try to create something for us. They played for a scoreless draw, and to their credit, they almost got it. But I just don't see what's there in D.C. that tells me they can go to Harrison and get a 2-1 win. I don't see that at all.
A big away goal there. Dax McCarty with the header, the captain getting the goal, Sasha Kljestan looping it over on a free kick, a beautiful free kick, but questionable set-piece defending as well from D.C. Dave?
Well, there's two things. One, I want everyone to know what a professional you are. There's a bag of smart food sitting in front of you that you've picked up 7 times since we've started.
I've had to tell you to put it down.
But the one thing that they see that gives them an opportunity in Harrison is Damian Perrinell goes out with an injury. Ronald Zubar almost picks up a yellow card. Matt Miazga, you mean? Yeah, he got the yellow card.
We'll talk about that in a second.
Matt Miazga limping around at the end of this game. So there might be something there that gives them an opportunity. You know it's going to come against the run of play or on set pieces, but the goals happen. And if they get one and they go up 1-0, then they might be able to hold on to get into extra time. So I think that's really what they would look at to say that they have going for them.
DC thought this tackle on Ronald Zubar was a red card. I thought so as well. He comes in recklessly, I would say, out of the box to try to clear a ball out and absolutely clears out Marcus Halstead. He was airborne, studs up, I think, off the ground. For me, a red. You guys agree? Doyle, you got something here?
No, I thought it was a red card, absolutely, and I don't know whether or not the disciplinary committee will take a look at it this week. I suppose we'll hear one way or the other, but to build on what Goss was saying, the one area where the Red Bulls can struggle, and that includes Matt Miazga, is defending in the air, and they did have some moments yesterday where Szabo was winning knockdowns, you know, and sort of putting the ball into space around him. Dax McCarty did a really good job of gobbling up those second balls. I think maybe if they push one of their two central midfielders a little higher or bring one of the wide midfielders in a little narrower, they can win some of those second balls and make a little bit more use of Sabario's ability to win the ball in the air. I mean, look, it's going to be ugly, smash mouth, regressive, direct, Route 1 football. But when DC plays like that, DC can find results.
It can. The first ever win for the Red Bulls at RFK Stadium in the playoffs, however. Let's talk to a guy who was in the press box who saw it shaken from the Red Bulls. That's Pablo Maurer, MLSist on Twitter. Pablo, how's it going, man?
How's it going?
It's going pretty good, Look, I think my passing percentage here in the booth is better than DC United's. We went over the numbers. It wasn't pretty from them, but I don't think that they're ashamed of this. I think this was what they wanted to do. They wanted to play for some set pieces, see if they could steal a goal.
I mean, if there's any coach in the league who's going to own that statistic, the 54.5% passing percentage, the zero shots on goal, it's Ben Olsen. I mean, I think he himself will tell you that he doesn't care that much about those things. You know, D.C. against New York, we're always going to try and play a sort of smash and grab, deal with their press, sort of play a lot of long balls, play very direct, Route 1 kind of soccer, hope to nick one on a set piece. I don't think this 1-0 result really serves them that poorly, and, I mean, I don't think that they're, you know, in reality that upset with it. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think Benny's too ashamed of the performance, to be honest with you.
Now, one of the things we saw tactically in this game was Chris Rolfe move wide. Alvaro Sabrio up top. No Chris Pontius. Unfortunately for him, he continues to be cursed with that injury bug. Just when you think it's gone, it comes right back. How did that change things for DC? Because we've seen Fabi and Rolfe, their chemistry is pretty good. And if you're not going to throw numbers forward, you're going to need one of those guys to come up with something special.
Yeah, I think it's ironic because, so DC, obviously, their regular season, I think they're only 3 times and they played the same 11. And I think in a weird way, you'd expect Fabi and Sabavio to have more chemistry than anybody on DC's lineup because they played for so long together at RSL. But I think Fabi and Chris have something, Chris Rolfe has something pretty special. I mean, I think they're really DC's two only really crafty, creative playmakers, you know, and I think I think Pontius, you know, had been sort of rounding back into form, which, I mean, I can't tell you how huge that is for this DC team, to get anything out of their wings, because they have Pontius and DeLeon. These are two players who are sort of maddeningly, you know, inconsistent and erratic, you know. So, yeah, I think you saw it on Sunday, you know. I mean, I think you saw against New England in the knockout round game how sort of graceful and creative Fabi and Rolfi and Nick and Chris can be. And I think you saw on Sunday how sort of, you know, frustrating it can be sometimes when it's Fabi and Sabo up top.
One of the guys that DC's been able to rely on is in goal, Bill Hamid. Ben Olsen saying all these teams have all these offensive stars. We have Bill Hamid. He's our star. Do they feel like they can ride him maybe to a playoff victory here? And it seems like he's playing at an all-time high.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, and I think there's something to that, right? I think these teams that sort of rely on stellar goalkeeping and sort of stealing goals, to me, you know, this is just my personal opinion, but to me, the difficult part for these teams is getting to the playoffs at all. I mean, I think it's difficult for those teams to sort of get 15 wins or, you know, amass 45, whatever you need points. I think once you're in the playoffs, I mean, I think it's a lot easier, honestly, to string together, you know, two or three wins, you know, a draw here, a draw there, and make a deep run. I mean, you know, Bill, I mean, for goodness sake, obviously there's a game earlier in the year where DC won on one shot, you know, and Bill stood in his head, and, you know, against Montreal, they put, I think, 25 shots up against DC, you know? So I certainly think there's something to that, you know? But yeah, I mean, I guess a lot is left to chance with DC, you know? A lot of other teams in the playoffs where you can sort of look at variables and kind of analyze things. And with DC, it's a little bit more, you know, the prognosticating is a little bit more of a guessing game. You know? So we'll have to see what happens.
There was a little bit of a guessing game going on Twitter and social media all over the place about this Ronald Zubar orange card. Thoughts on DC about that? And how also did you think they dealt without Bobby Boswell?
Is orange card a term?
I just made it up.
Yeah. I'm not going to call it an orange card because that was a red card. But anyways, you know, I think they dealt well without Boswell. I think that was a huge question mark. Obviously, have Kofi Opari and Steve Birnbaum on their own have done well enough this year, you know, but each of them has really been paired with Boswell. They really don't have a lot of time playing together, and I think they were actually pretty great. I think you saw even on New York's goal, you saw it was actually Perry Kitchen that got beat. It wasn't, you know, wasn't either of DC's center backs. You know, so I don't know. I mean, I think obviously it's great to get Bobby back, but I think DC did plenty well centrally.
Well, you can follow all of Pablo's coverage there on DC on the Atlantic Cup, the second leg of the conference semifinals at MLS. This, you can also get many different memes. We got the Didier Drogba leg lock. Real quick before we get you out of here, Pablo, your favorite leg lock Photoshop that you did this week?
It's got to be the one of him clutching the little miniature Mark Geiger doll. I don't know if anybody saw that one, but I just like the idea of the league gifting him a pro referee doll, because sometimes it feels like he's got the refs in his pocket at this point.
Well, go check that one out. MLSS, this, I can't say that, obviously. I'm having trouble with your Twitter handle.
Pablo, do you want to say it yourself so we could get it out there?
Yeah, might as well.
Yeah. MLSist, yeah.
There you go. Tongue twister, I guess. I don't know. Thank you, Pablo. We'll keep it moving here as we go into the break. We're going to head to the mailbag right now. Some good stuff coming. Chicago Fire head coaching search. Who will it be?
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
The 1-2 again. Inside corner! The Royals, 2015 World Champions!
Back now on Extratime Radio. Dave Goss's penance. You dropped it down. You know, no even fade out.
I'm not going to fade Joe Buck's voice in and out of our show. Okay.
Oh, we are here to the mailbag. Remember, complete Audi MLS Cup playoff coverages at MLSsoccer.com/playoffs. All of Matt Doyle's analysis, you know you want some of that. We got Thomas Rongen giving you on the video side, all the coverage in the markets. It's good stuff. Plus us, we're doing this. We're on Thursday. We're going to preview the Sunday games. But first, the mailbag. Dave, bring us in. What are we talking about?
Eddie Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
An MLS, I guess, can we call him a legend, Doyle?
Like the Jam, the G-A-M.
He won two Golden Boots, right?
So that includes legend?
I mean, like, if you win multiple Golden Boots, I think you get legend status, don't you?
So
it's like he's right on that line. He really is.
He officially retired. DC United doing a little bit of a ceremony before their game for him. I think my favorite fact about Eddie Johnson, and there are many, was that he was off the face of the earth, came back and scored, 22 goals with Seattle out of nowhere?
Yeah.
So
I think with Eddie, what you can say about him is that he always made the game and he always made everything surrounding the game more fun.
Yeah.
And maybe if you were a fan of his team, it wasn't always that case because, you know, he would do some, you know, he'd do the money sign and he'd cause some trouble. But the guy had personality. He was engaging. He was forward facing. And sometimes I think those are things that this – not sometimes. Those are things I think that this league needs more of to drive interest, to drive storylines. He contributed something special to this league, both on the field and off, and it's a sad day to see him go.
And Doyle, real quick, I think this is coming out of left field, but we spoke with Rafael Honigstein, and we're going to put the interview out next week. But one of the things he discussed about with German players is that they look for highest intelligence, and then they try and get the physical – they wait and they coach them as the physical ability matches up. It's felt like for a while the U.S. has been on the flip side, and Eddie Johnson was kind of a guy who got thrown in really quickly and then struggled to, let's say, make the mark of what people expected of him. In the end, when you look at his career, is it a successful U.S. soccer player's career?
I mean, it's successful for, I mean, by most measures, right? He scored, 19 goals with the national team. He played in a World Cup. I don't think you could say he wasn't a success, but look, he's a victim of what at times has been a pretty half-assed approach to talent identification and development in this country, and part of the hype machine as well. We have to do, and when I say we, I don't just mean you, me, and Weeby. I mean, MLS and USL and NASL and even colleges have to do a better job of developing well-rounded soccer players, making them see and play the game faster, understanding what's on the field without needing to take that extra touch and slow the game down. And I think what happened with EJ when he struggled in Europe, specifically in England, he was not ready for a tempo where you're denied that extra touch, where you're denied that extra half second. And it's worth remembering, though, that he went to a pretty decent team in Greece, and I think he had something like 5 goals in 11 games for Aris Thessaloniki. So he wasn't a complete washout in Europe. It's just, if you want to be at the highest level, you have to be able to play the game quickly. You can't wait and then decide what to do. And I'm not sure, I am sure that development in the United States when Eddie Johnson was coming through was not up for teaching guys at that level.
19 career goals and 63 caps with the national team, 24 goals for FC Dallas, 17 in 2 years for KC Wiz, as well as 23 in 49 appearances for Seattle Sounders FC.
Yeah, I saw a hat trick from Eddie at Arrowhead Stadium in my first ever MLS game. So that's a special moment for sure.
So a guy who will not be retiring and will be continuing to play is Jermaine Jones. He was quoted in an article saying, "Right now I don't really look about what happens next year." Now, this is Jermaine Jones, not me speaking. I'll go home, try to relax for a couple of days, and then I'll be focused on the national team. I already said that me and my family feel at home here. It's a nice place. I like the team, talking about the Revolution. I like the club, but soccer and sports, you don't stay there if you just like the people. I don't know. I have some offers, not only from MLS. We will go into it with the family and then decide. He went on to say that he does want to play at the 2018 World Cup for the U.S. national team, and he wants to sign one long-term deal that will keep him with the team so he can move his family to wherever he is. Through that time, there was rumors in the article about South America, Brazil maybe having sending him offers.
Tijuana,
as well as,
maybe the Southern California connection. I mean, it makes sense that he wants a longer deal. The question is who might be willing to give it to him. And we've seen over the last couple of years here in MLS that when he's on the field and healthy, he's a difference maker. But he's been hurt an awful lot, and he's had to miss an awful lot of games. So I think any team that looks at him will take that into consideration, but you can't deny that he's been a big part of the Revs' seasons the last year and a half or so.
Team that Jermaine Jones almost ended up with, the Chicago Fire. Ooh, I know. I'm sorry, Fire fans. Trevor J. Moore, though, sent us an email. They have a coaching decision to make. He gives us 9 candidates. I applaud Trevor's email. I applaud the effort. We will be sending him a Chicago Fire jersey. So
authentic
here,
jersey. What's up?
He put a description in each one, but I'm going to give you the names. 1, Jason Kreiss, Eric Winalda, Miguel Herrera, who's taken a job with Club Tijuana, so he's off the options. Brad Friedel, Tob Ramos, Mike Petke, Brian Bliss, Larry Sunderland, and Chris Armas.
Who stands out for you, Doyle?
Kreiss, yeah, and I think the decision on whether he goes or stays with NYCFC will be coming soon. If he's out, he's probably the favorite from that group, but I think you have to think wider than that list that was presented. One guy whose name I think a couple people are starting to whisper is Guillermo Barros-Skelotto, who would make a lot of sense as an MLS coach. Wouldn't surprise me to see him thrown into the mix. I think they're going to aim big. Chicago's a big market. They have a pretty great history, and I think their fan base wants to see them hire somebody with some real cachet within the league.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's probably time, at least if you're talking about the organization, for a little bit of a reset as far as the perception that they have. And the step one here, obviously, is head coach. So I think Kreiss or GBS would be great hires, but I 100% think that Hauptmann and the gang are going to cast a wide net. They can get some interest here. Chicago's a big city. They've got some resources. It's a pretty good situation.
Yeah, the one question I would have, though, is are they going to get that USL team up and running? Because we know the Fire have a good academy. We know there's a ton of talent around there, and we know they have we know that MLS teams have the ability to really maximize that talent if they get a USL team up and running. If I was Jason Kreiss or Scalotto or anybody else, I would make that part of the deal. Like, okay, I'll take this job and I'll fix this franchise if you give me the resources to really do it and make us able to compete with the likes of LA and Seattle and New York and Vancouver and Toronto, etc.
A lot to think about there for the Fire. Let us know what you think at Extra Time Radio, extratime@mlssoccer.com. We want your thoughts on anything, really. We're going to give out some of these authentic jerseys from the Fire. We still have a ton of Oyo swag. We've got these DOS Reboot books. I mean, we've got a lot of stuff to give out. Let us know what you think. Big thanks to our guests here on Monday. Matt Pence, Jamie Goldberg, Pablo Maurer, and Ollie Tremblay. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, Dave Goss. Matt, the Armchair Analyst Doyle. We'll be back on Thursday.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.